Welcome back, baseball amigos, to episode 77 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available exclusively via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. The Nats GM Show is sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. Please go to NoHalftime.com for more information. Now, let's get to our special guest.
Hey, this is Ben Lindbergh, author of the best-selling book, The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, and you are listening to The Nats GM Show.
Now, we are proud to welcome the Director of Technology for Baseball Prospectus and the founder of Pitch Info, Harry Pavlidis. Harry, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to be back.
So, I guess I got to see you, a little less than a month ago now at Sabre Seminar. And First and foremost, it's always great to see you and catch up a little bit.
Yeah, but, good to see you.
But I had to get you on because you and Jonathan Judge did kind of a co-presentation this year on game calling. Last year, you all rolled out DRA, which was kind of the new pitcher evaluation metric, and now this year we've got something for game calling with catchers. And I'd love to, place to kind of start is just let you explain, you know, what your work was doing and kind of what it entails.
Yeah, sure. Basically, you know, DRA, deserved run average, is our flagship pitching metric now. And part of the process and the procedure of assembling it, which is it's literally about two dozen different pieces that are put together. And some of those are you can just turn them around and analyze the impact of the catcher as opposed to just the pitcher. So this isn't catcher ERA. This isn't catcher DRA because a lot of things don't matter. So where there was a few dozen things that matter for a pitcher, you know, I think two dozen literally, there's only three things that seem to really matter for a catcher in terms of what Jonathan calls the residue of being there. So essentially for how we measure quote unquote game calling is what's this inexplicable but attributable to the catcher, not random, value or detriment to the game. And it seems to be produced through mostly strikeouts and you know, a little bit of strikeouts, a little bit of balls in play, particularly home runs, not actual balls in play, which not too surprising. But then the main thing that catchers seem to have influence on over multiple seasons, it's one thing, the other two things don't seem to correlate well over time, but over multiple seasons, they do influence the walks that their pitchers give up. So this is in addition to framing. This is, you know, framing is controlled for in this. So you can be a good framer and still have some extra bases on balls that happen or don't happen that seem to be a result of quote-unquote game calling. So, you know, we don't really know what game calling is. It's probably a misnomer, but game value doesn't sound very good. But when we first did this, and again, this was something that comes out of, you know, the components that for DRA, when we our first version of DRA, we actually did the same thing and looked at game calling, and it was pretty very similar. We actually talked to AJ Ellis as part of the piece I did for ESPN and asked him, you know, why are you a good game caller? And it had nothing to do with the game on the field. All his answers were about communications and trust and things like that. So there's pretty much a theme when you talk to catchers and catching instructors that the catcher's job is to learn how to communicate, learn what the pitcher's strengths are, and call the game to the pitcher's strengths and preferences, and be able to be trustworthy enough through your preparation and off the field rapport building to go off the game plan or call something the pitcher may not normally throw, or you know, so the pitcher feels comfortable and just going ahead and giving you that pitch. Now, of course, the pitcher may be calling his own game. The bench may be calling the game. You don't know. So this residue of the catcher being there, it's very interesting, and it seems to be a reliable and somewhat, reasonable thing. But which we want to, what I was trying to do, my part of the presentation was about the exploration of what matters here. What can we see on the, in the field of play, or what can we track and gather from the field of play concretely that the catcher does and may have influence over. And again, and going back and talking to catchers and coaches and even some assistant general managers about this, the perspectives all seem to kind of be the same. You can see the catcher's influence in a few different ways. Perhaps the pacing, if you measure how quickly they work together, how well they work together, if they stay in rhythm together, that's usually a good sign. Not a lot of going out to the mound, not a lot of shakeoffs. The ability to squash big innings and help the pitcher get through. Those are both kind of hard to measure. The last one in particular, pacing, we can probably do. We just haven't gotten around to it. But the last one's interesting, but hard to figure out. But the one I looked at that you saw at Sabre seminar was pitch calling. What pitch selection was, which is kind of the most obvious area. And the biggest finding was that catchers don't have all that much influence over pitch selection. It's 3 to 4 times larger to the pitcher. It's usually the batter may have as much influence, which isn't very much. The base runner in some situations could have influence over the catcher's and pitcher's selection. The biggest thing is what's the situation in the game? What's the count? And who is the pitcher? Those are really what drive pitch selection. And so this fraction that we came up with, that the pitcher's 3 or 4 times more important, heavier influence, we found the range of influence is not that large. So at the biggest end of the stick, you have something like an 8% or 4%. 8% would be an extreme kind of an outlier, but a 3 to 4% difference in a pitch selection is large. That puts you on one end or the other of the leaderboard. So if you have a situation, for example, like the Chicago White Sox, where you went from a guy like Tyler Flowers, who likes to call off speed, to Deanna Navarro, who does not like to call off speed, you're talking about a handful of changeups not thrown for a guy like Chris Sale this year over last year. So we have no idea if that's good, bad, or indifferent. So right now we just have these two piles of information. We have what Jonathan is measuring with the residue being there, and then the pile of stuff about what's their actual impact and choice on pitch calling. And it looks pretty clear to us so far that the impact on pitch calling is not going to explain their influence in the score, in how many walks are allowed, how many strikeouts are allowed. So we've got a long way to go.
And this really jumped out to me because I was surprised, because we see so many catchers and over the years that bat, 220 or what have you, and you think, oh, well, the guy's got to be a great game caller. He's got to be everything you mentioned, communicator and framer and everything else. And it really surprised me in your findings that you found, not no difference, but a very, very small difference across the catchers in baseball. Why? Any theories as to why that might be?
Because they all try to be subsumed by the pitcher. All the catchers who are approachable enough to be interviewed about these things, either on or off the record, will basically say, I will pick the pitch that's the right pitch for the pitcher. The batter matters. It's like there's very little influence, and they'll even off the record badmouth catchers who have reputations for. And pitchers will do this. Pitchers and catchers will both express a displeasure for a catcher who shows a preference. Like, yeah, that guy does not like calling. He won't call a breaking ball when there's a man on third. Mm. And they don't like that. They don't like that, that the pitch is being, they can detect a preference that the catcher has that is not in line with the situation or the, or their own strengths. They want to pitch their own strengths, you know, so that that's the, so what makes these guys good is their ability to disappear. I mean, that may be a strange way of putting it, but do they, in terms of the pace of game, or that just the pitcher just goes and works at his normal rhythm. There's no interruptions. He just gets the ball, throws the ball, you know, just no conversations. There's no sidebars. There's no stress in the dugout between innings arguing about what they should have thrown, which comes out to more conversations later as the game goes on and they slow down, you know, and, or they get really slow when there's runners on base. You know, just you start to think, okay, is this pitcher, you know, not comfortable out there with this catcher based on their speed? Or is it in their, you know, what we do their pitch selection? It's, you shouldn't see it. You should see that the pitcher is out there doing his thing and that the catcher disappears, that the catcher isn't having an influence. So the Yadi Molina as the really strong driving force, calling the games, and really dominating the Cardinals pitching staff, apparently, is what I'm told quite a bit from people who follow, you know, how they talk about who calls the game and what the consequences are, shaking off Yadi, et cetera, in the Cardinal War. That may not be beneficial. He shows up actually as the one the most likely. He shows up very heavily on the leaderboards as being someone who likes to call a hard ball, a hard pitch. And that may be influenced by the fact that there's guys who throw cutters that we consider a hard pitch. I mean, we have to like cut the data up a couple of different ways. But in any case, Yadi seems to show up differently than even other catchers on his staff and other catchers and other teams who have handled his pitchers. Shows up just as having a different preference. Doesn't call a changeup as much, doesn't call a curveball as much. So that goes with a, you know, to my theory of, well, that may not make him a great game caller. But then again, his value typically is good. He typically shows up as.
And that's interesting. How far have you taken the research back? Because I know that Pudge Rodriguez had the reputation as always calling fastballs with the runner on so he could throw runners out.
He could, let's see. I think we went back as far as 1960s so far, if not further. Yeah, we've gone back to the 1960s. So if you give me a second, you may have some editing to do or play some music. I can find out. This is a mechanical keyboard, listeners. All right, Pudge. Yeah, wow, that's cool. Let's see. The mix over time. Some years, you know, and this is not unusual, but some years he was really good. But there tended to be from the more spurious strikeout and hit, you know, balls and play things. He was generally speaking neutral, average over time, I'd say. Hmm. Probably overall. At one point in his career, it looks like earlier in his career, he was better.
Very interesting.
So, I mean, that could be for a lot of reasons. And one of the things that we have to really try and understand is what happens when you change teams.
That's a good point. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because that you know, especially mid-season, things like that. So at the end of his career, he was not, you know, and most of his years with Texas, he was a beneficial game caller. Most of his years after that, he was not.
Hmm.
So he was very, very good in his first year in Florida, but there was that he was on the wrong end of walk runs. Yeah, it seemed like he was kind of a, you know, came out pretty much better in Texas than he did elsewhere.
Very interesting. As he aged, maybe there was something to that theory. Interesting.
I mean, maybe also here's another, this, you know, this crazy speculation here, but it's if the catcher is so established and as like a major figure that they just call the games hit the how they see it.
Hmm.
You know? And that doesn't work.
Right.
So you may look at it as, we'll see how in control he is. They never shake him off. Must be a great game caller. It's like, well, that may not be good.
Well, and that,
you know,
could explain.
I really wonder, like, now, is that really the, is, you know, maybe for some catchers that works. Maybe so for some situations, for some pitchers that works. But most of these catchers seem more like super communicators, amateur psychologists. they try to study and prepare and focus on the pitcher's strengths and knowing how that pitcher responds to different situations and you know what you have to do to help them through and you know kind of targets you can set up to help them maybe make adjustments or refine you know how they're releasing the ball.
Well, and that reminds me of what John Baker said when he was talking with Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller, also at Sabre Seminar, about how how important he felt just the communication of, you know, being on the same side as the pitcher. That it almost goes hand in hand with what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And John's one of those, you know, cerebral guy, you know, ball players who, you know, as you know, even in his past, his playing career, he's very interested in how these things work. And he's very clear. It was all about, you know, how did it, you know. He said it to me, you know, at the conference. He's like, "How do you think I stayed in the league for so long?" He's like, "It wasn't because I could hit, you know." He's like, "What I did was made sure I understood the pitchers, and you know, all these guys who seem to be like the AJ Ellis of the world, you know, the guys who are not, you know, this all around great catcher. It's like, how does this guy stay in the league? How's this guy in the game? Why is this guy getting so many, you know, years service time when he's really kind of, you know, doesn't look like really good baseball player?" It's like, well, because he is.
Right, exactly.
He's, you know, it's like David Ross, you know, it's people like that who, you know, Ross has flashier skills and he's a really good framer and a good thrower and whatnot. But, you know, there's those guys who just, you know, aren't as obvious and they don't have that big cannon of an arm. They may not have been a framing wizard, you know, that suddenly got appreciated in the last few years. They just may be critical to their pitching staff's comfort and ability to just focus on execution. Now, how you get to that and how you accurately measure that, we're working on it. And it's a very slow thing. We really don't understand what we have at this point because, like I said, we don't know what this measurement is really telling us. And it's going to be very indirect and very loosey-goosey. And there's a lot of hidden things, but it starts to kind of, as we've talked tonight, as an example, it raises questions about the theory of the game and how it's caught and how you recruit perhaps and develop catchers, you know? So that's probably more interesting to think about. If it makes us think of some really interesting questions, if it doesn't answer any, that's okay. At least we'll have some other ones to talk about. And I think, as you probably noted at Sabre Seminar this year, there was so much about this, you know,
yeah,
the Bannister-Baker thing and you know, Jonathan and I, there was a lot about what the catcher's influence is on the game. There's a lot of interest in that now. So it's we're kind of at a new frontier of like questions and study. So we'll build this game calling metric along on the side. And as we figure out what on earth game calling is, we'll start to apply that metric accordingly.
Well, and in your metric, another thing that jumped out to me during your presentation was you had Nationals catcher Wilson Ramos as number one on your metric list as the best game caller in baseball.
Yeah, I think what he was tops in 2015.
I think
that's
correct.
He's still quite good. Yeah, he was – oops, wrong. Oops, there we go. Yeah. That's 2016. He's still doing really well this year. But yeah, he's absolutely been one of the guys who shows up at the top of our list. In 2015, he was the best, and a lot of it came from his influence on walks, so we would have expected him to continue to be good. He has been, but not quite the same level, which isn't surprising. There's a lot of swing, you know, but also in town, sort of, depending on how you describe the size of a town. Readers and Joseph were also very good in 2015. I mean, all three of those guys appeared in our top 10.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, which is kind of cool. But this year, you know, not quite the same. Now, we haven't updated this since the conference, so this is a little bit out of date, but it's not going to move that much. Ramos is still in the top 10.
And when you say limiting
those other guys,
when you say limiting walks, does that it encompasses framing? But what else kind of is involved in
that? It's just that there's just less walks than you'd expect based on the pitcher, the batter, the umpire, the game situation, and all these other factors. There's all these things that go into, you know, your expected walks over time. And the catchers seem to have the more measurable influence of their game calling. Their residue of being there seems to be around walks.
Interesting. What about Jose Lobaton for the Nationals? Because he's been that guy for me that I've identified. You were talking a little bit earlier in the interview about, you know, you just don't understand why a guy is still in the league, this and that. That's me to him. I just don't see it with him at all.
Really? Okay. So let's see. Last year, let's see. He was, I have to pull up. Last year, about average. This year, likes him. So he seems to be leaning on the better than average side of things.
And a lot of people like his framing ability. I don't know how the numbers are, but he gets a lot of credit for that.
I'm pretty sure he is a good framer off the top of my head, yeah. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, but it starts to kind of you go, is there something? Yeah, maybe.
There has to be.
To me, there's kind of a – it's an entry – might be an entry criteria. There might be just this massive, you know, like usually when there's a talent – like there's a bias to play that talent. With catching, the talents are so more diffused and hidden. So you may have a guy who's selected to play in the major leagues, like all the backup catchers who may be really good game callers, and maybe hard to separate them numerically because they don't catch very often, and they're not that much different than each other, but they're all there because they're all really good. So there may be very difficult, weird, like sampling and like sort of bias, you know, issues that don't have.
That's
and the other,
interesting.
You know,
that's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
So it's strange catching. Yeah, it's hard. So these numbers, you know, I think they're very fuzzy, but I think that they're very interesting. Especially when, you know, I didn't put together multi-year roll-ups, but we should do that because you know when you see guys over a 3-year period having good numbers, going from different teams and having good numbers, you start to really. Yeah, you might want to put a red circle around guys like that. So when we get a little more time as the season ends, we're going to publish everything, including you know end of season numbers for these for the past few years. Any of the pitch influence rankings, we'll update those. Publish the ones we think are probably a couple leaderboards on that. And write some articles about what we did and what we found. And I know other people are doing things like. Journalistically going out and talking to baseball players and asking them questions. So I think you'll see some more stuff in the press and media about this stuff. So not just from us.
Can you give us some other names of some guys that are either both good or bad, you know, that we might either be expecting or not expecting? I know you said Yachty is.
Well, we always, there are Sal Perez, I think, is consistently up on top. I'm just going to look at the last 2 years and see who repeats. Yeah, Sal is up there repeatedly. Yachty is up there. Caleb Joseph's up there. I see Miguel Montero a couple times up here.
That makes sense.
So, you know, it's AJ Ellis. So, I mean, there's definitely there's definitely some of those names. Those are the guys who we like. Seems like Evan Gattis is really we like him this year. The guy who comes up really on the bad end of this consistently is Wellington Castillo.
And he doesn't have the best reputation as a defensive catcher. Yeah,
he's really bad. He has 2015 and 2016. He shows up as really bad. All three teams. Excuse me. Yeah, he has a bad number with all three teams he played for and across those two seasons. So that's not that great. Yes, Manny Grandal, he showed up, I think, bad in 2015, but I think he is showing up better this year. You know what that means. So, yeah, Lobaton's definitely up there. And Nick Hundley, he's one of the guys who shows up as a bad game caller. He's one of the guys who showed up on one of our leaderboards for having, like, a distaste for calling breaking balls, I think. It's in my talk. I think I have the stats here. And he's also someone who has a reputation in the game that is less than glowing about you know, about his guidance of a pitcher through a game. So he's one of those guys who checks all the boxes, shows up as an outlier in one of his preferences, has a reputation amongst pitchers, and also just scores poorly. Gotcha. So I guess we could kind of feel safely that Nick Hundley may not be the best game caller, staff handler.
Well, and my final question for you is, so where do we, or we, where do you and Jonathan and, the, you know, the rest of your guys, where do you take this information and what's the next, you know, kind of frontier?
Looking more at pitch selection, there's some more work to do here. Pacing, that's another place we're going to look at how they handle, if we see anything in the speed of the game. So right now we're very, you know, focused oddly enough on going back and fixing our pass ball wild pitch model, because it's a tricky thing to measure because it's, you know, a lot of pitchers just don't throw wild pitches. As Jonathan has found, that there's kind of a filter. the guys who throw a lot of wild pitches are not in the major leagues, so you don't have a lot of, you know, chances to measure a catcher's ability on a real problematic pitch. So he's come up with a way of doing that. So we're probably going to quickly finish that off and turn our attention back to this.
Well, very, very cool. I can't wait to see kind of what you guys put together at the end of the season, and I really look forward to kind of what the next frontier of this is. So I'd love to give you a spot here for your plugs where people can find you on Twitter, BP, and kind of anywhere in between.
Yeah, Harry Pav, HARYPAV on Twitter. And, of course, baseballperspectives.com. That's where all our stats and articles are. And if you like pitch FX and that stuff, you can see our data at brooksbaseball.net.
Very, very cool. Very, very big fan of your work. Obviously, great meeting you and seeing you at Sabre Seminar this year. And thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate you clearing some time on a Sunday night for us.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you so much. And that was our interview with Harry Pavlidis from Baseball Prospectus, and a friend of mine and just a really, really smart baseball guy. I was glad to have him on tonight and pick his brain a little bit about game calling in the next frontier. So thank you very much to Harry for coming on. And I also want to thank our sponsor, No Halftime, for sponsoring the interview this evening. What is No Halftime, you ask? Well, let me fill you in real quickly, if I might. You're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper versus Manny Machado, Mike Trout versus Miguel Cabrera, or Chris Davis versus Ichiro. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATCHGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. Hey, guys, definitely check out No Halftime. I know we've got fantasy football season starting now, so I've been messing around with the No Halftime app, and I know they're a sponsor, but over and above that, it's a really good product, and it's a lot of fun here. Fantasy football, a good way to kill some time on some Sundays here, you know, going through in the fall. So hopefully everybody checks them out, and thank you for sponsoring us there, No Halftime. With that, the episode number 77 is a wrap. Bye for now.